Hey, everybody. Welcome back to part one of a two-part Christmas spectacular here. Just kind of like Halloween. We released two episodes, and we got a good one for you. But I want to tell you about some of the sponsors real quick before we begin. Are you waking up with back pain? 50% of Americans are. Sleep Ovation's new mattresses, 700 tiny mattresses that individually cradle natural curves of your spine. This provides perfect comfort and spine support for back pain relief and the best damn sleep in your life. If you pre-order yours now at sleepovation.com and use the show code VERBAL, you get $100 off. Go check out Sleep Ovation. The mattresses are awesome. We just got one. It is fantastic. I'm not going back to anything else. That is Sleep Ovation. Now, Susan Robb is a woman that helps sponsor this podcast, and she's working with Kim Ward and Paul Templer for the Nepal Outreach Program. So basically, their goal is to raise $25,000 through individual and corporate sponsorships. They already raised over $5,000 to put 15 kids into school and supply 17 ladies and moms with sewing supplies to start a business in an effort to sell these really beautiful quilts that they make. They already sold 10 quilts, and they've been shipped to 5 different countries all around the world. Kim Ward, the executive director of the Templer Foundation, is a not-for-profit 501c3. They want to secure a house for the first 15 and enroll all 17 kids in school this year. The first $3,500 raised so far is going towards the tuition. Okay, so they're off to a good start, and they want to help sustain the sewing program and the Templer Foundation helped start it this July. Kim and Susan are working tirelessly. So if you are interested in donating and being part of good cause, especially around the holidays here, look for the GoFundMe, the Nepal Outreach Program, or donate through Twitter at Kim Marie Ward or M Susan Robb, R-O-B-B. So it's just a really good cause, and we're proud to be working with them. Now, we happen to have two brewery sponsors on the podcast. One of them happens to be Demented Brewing, and that's located in Middlesex, New Jersey. Demented is one of the coolest places to check out as far as tasting rooms go, as far as different types of beers go. They're always releasing something new. In fact, they just released Gluttony, their coffee stout on draft, and Siren, their berry sour aged in mead barrels, and Banshee, their sour ale aged in scotch barrels in 22-ounce bombers. This Sunday, they're going to be releasing Hometown Hero, their pills and their lager. So go get some growler fills for Christmas Eve. Get some cool bottles as Christmas presents, stocking stuffers. It's just an awesome place to visit. That is Demented Brewing. Now, Manskirt Brewing is the other brewery that helps sponsor this podcast, and they are located in Hackettstown, New Jersey, in the old bank building. Just a really cool, spacious setup, always rotating seasonally inspired ales. Go check out Joe Fisher in his Manskirt. Grab a couple growlers to go. They got music this Saturday, the 23rd, a local band called Boyd Ding, 7 to 11 p.m. Their business hours are normal this week, even on Christmas Eve, so make sure you go try some fresh beer from Manskirt Brewing. Now, Trivia Revolution is a trivia company. I happen to host 4 on Wednesday nights, but they also sponsor this podcast. You can find Trivia Revolution in beer bars and breweries all over New Jersey. It's just a really fun time. So go check out Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. All right. So in the first part of our Christmas spectacular, we are joined by the two directors and the star of the film, Tree Man. Go check it out. It's on Netflix now. If it doesn't put you in the Christmas spirit, I don't know what will. So it's all about a man named Francois and how he sells. He comes down from Canada, stays for a month, sells Christmas trees. So we have the directors Brad Rothschild and John Ryder and Francois himself. So with that, guys, Merry Christmas. Thanks for your support. Keep listening to the podcast and enjoy this episode.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Keep it going, Scotty. I'm head bobbing right now.
Yeah. Rocking out.
Fingers are going up and down. It's a party.
Welcome back.
Thanks, Scott.
To the Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. I think we hit the 180s today. I think we hit the 180s and special episode today. Merry Christmas, Berlew. Well, it's not Christmas yet.
No. Yet, but it's Hanukkah now.
Yeah, but this is the last episode you'll hear before the Christmas holiday, though.
So I am not allowed to go back at previous times.
No.
Not just a single one.
Just this one. But
I want to know how Daniel Pacini was in Mortal Kombat.
Don't go back to that episode.
No.
I always wonder if some of the ones that we like remember as not being great are that bad. You know?
I don't think any of them that I can recall were just like, you know, fingernails on chalkboard bad. I mean, some of them I'll sit back and go, okay, that's not probably going to be the one I'm going to remember on my deathbed, but...
That would suck if that's what does happen.
I just want you all to know, I once interviewed a guy who had a really big mustache and was in competitions. His name was Gandhi Jones.
I once interviewed someone who made a movie about gay unicorns.
Well, nobody knows about that. I guess that's my secret as I die.
I kind of forgot about that one. We once interviewed this person who was directing a movie, like a gay movie about unicorns, and it just turned into like kind of like a weird, vulgar interview, and not really our style. Didn't fit the show.
It's like... When he started saying stuff, I'm like, you didn't want to check with us beforehand if this is
our
angle?
Yeah, it was a little, we're not really a dirty show here, so.
Yeah. Like, if we're off air, we'll chat it up and just laugh it off or whatever.
It was just over the top and weird, but yeah. So sorry, Killer Unicorns or whatever.
Sorry, Doug Max.
Whatever the hell that movie was. Yeah. It is the annual Christmas episode, Berlew. I have to give ourselves a pat on the back.
All right, I'll turn around. Yeah. Go ahead.
Put your pants back on. We did it, buddy. We set out a goal this year with the podcast. We tried to have a guest on every single week of the show. Mm-hmm. This being the last week of the show for the year, we did it.
The New Year's one won't come out before New Year's?
No. Well, let's see. That'll come out the Wednesday after, so it'll be...
Yeah, you're right. So this
is it. This is the end of 2018. So next week we'll go more into kind of like, favorite moments of the year and some of the guests we talked about. But we have... I bet you we've had close to 100 guests in this year.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check it out.
So many of these shows had two. Mm-hmm. To guest on. We started doubling them up. I think even one or two of them had three, possibly, early in the year.
I'm trying to remember. Did any of the stuff we did at, like at the Kilt Fest and all that, was that in this year? I'm trying to remember.
I don't know. Try to remember when your cramp was. That
well, that's
got
weak,
so. Carrying equipment. I feel like Kilt Fest might have been more than a year ago.
I think you're right, because I remember bringing it up as something to promote. It's like, oh yeah, it's back again.
Yeah, some of the episodes that I thought were that seemed like yesterday. Like I'll look at them, like, wow, that was like a year and a half, 2 years ago. Mm. But we did it. So go back and listen to all 52. I guess there is, right? I don't know if we might have took a week off. Maybe 50, 51 episodes. There's a guest on every single. One of them, and lots of good guests. But are you in the Christmas spirit, buddy?
Half and half. I mean, we're kind of pushing off Christmas for this year just until things are stable financially and job-wise. But, I'm not sitting around boo-hooing about it. I'm happy for everybody else right now, so...
I'm happy for everybody else celebrating their wonderful Christmases.
Yeah, I just stare at somebody's... outside their door and just knock on the window and give them a thumbs up.
You try to like do the whole Ghost of Christmas Past thing, just watching through the window.
Yeah, you know, omit the actual ghost that keeps me invisible.
Who
you know?
Is that? Ooh.
Ooh, you need to change your ways.
Leave me alone. This is my family. Go away. But I think I'm in the Christmas mood, man.
That's good.
You know, like being like on social media too much like we all are, and seeing how negative everybody everybody is about everything, you kind of get down on things. But I started to see some brighter sides of humanity in the last week. I saw two things that kind of put me in a good mood. Not really, I guess they're not really Christmas per se, but it was more of like a restoration of like that there's actually good people left on the planet.
Well, we did go a week without a huge explosion, so thumbs up for us.
I don't think any shootings either.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I heard, there was some like train derailment and somebody was hanging on over an interstate from it.
Yep. Well, thanks for bringing that mood right back down.
Well, it's not a shooting, so that's cool.
Oh.
It's like that cat on the clothesline poster, you know? It's like, hang in there, buddy.
That's really nice of you. Really.
Merry Christmas.
I guess you do have the Christmas.
Yeah.
No, but one of the charities I've used twice for the Tap House shows is the New Jersey Firemen's Home.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to work right over there, and I never went in it or anything, but I've passed it a bunch of times, and I had a check for them from one of the comedy shows. I was like, you know what, I'm going to stop in. And me and the woman have been talking back and forth about a year, like, thinking about doing, like, a comedy show there for the people that stay there. Now, so I go there, and she's there. She's like, hey, do you want to take a tour? So it's this old mansion of a building. It was somebody's mansion. I guess they turned it into this fireman's home, and it's a home for all you had to do is be an ex-fireman. So it's almost like a nursing home for ex-firemen. And they can live there. It's the only one in the country, apparently.
Wow.
That is dedicated to solely firemen. And they have like 90 beds, and they have 70-something people there that stay there full-time. And so it was really like inspiring the way they treat these guys, and like they have like computer rooms and all these break rooms and TV rooms, and they do all these programs with them. It's just so there's different levels. There's the guys who are like completely kind of out of it, like a nursing home, but there's also like some young guys who are like, you know, down on their luck or like in wheelchairs that live there full time, and they can live there for, I think she said, it's like $850 a month, which is like nothing when it comes to medical care.
Mm-hmm.
$850 like is like what you pay for like a IV if you go to the emergency room, probably more than that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just very inspiring to see like all these people like working with these firemen and joking around with them, and so it was just a really cool place. So I hope to do some more stuff with them in the future. Nice. So that was like one thing. I was like, hey, you know, there's some good people in the world here.
Well, if you want, I'll set a fire right now and get these guys over here. We can interview them,
dude. They're like retired and old, and a lot of them are
yeah, but like, you know, get them back in the spirit of things, you know.
So to get them back in the spirit, you're gonna wheel them into a burning house.
Yeah. You know, bring back the old memories.
I feel like you're missing the Christmas spirit idea here. Maybe by the end of the podcast you'll nail one of these.
I don't know. I think I'm pretty spot on this.
So
one.
So far your
Listen,
comments
I'm
are,
already halfway starting the fire right now. Let's just see what happens.
So far your comments are that there was no shootings, but there was a guy hanging from a train. That was pretty cool.
I didn't say pretty cool. I was happy
for
him.
I will
living.
Go back to the tape. You said, so that's pretty cool. You know, and you compared it to some...
I watch NFL games. After further review, I'm going to be correct.
All right. Well, we'll see. Well, this is where later on I'll edit it and plop it back in, like all what right. You said a couple times. Bad for business. And then the second thing you said was to wheel old veteran firefighters who can't take care of themselves into a burning building to warm them up to get them back into the swing of things.
We'll keep their helpers with them so like he can instruct them, okay, throw the water over there and use the axe over there.
So you're not even giving them hoses. Now they're just tossing water.
Yeah.
So you're going to give them like Poland Spring
Well,
model.
That's the old school way. Come on now.
Oh, so we're going back to the days of like the Bucket Brigade.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, come on now. I mean, you know how some old people are like, I hate this new technology. So they would be very happy when they see what I give them.
I mean, I'd love to hear your thoughts on war veterans too, how we should treat them coming home. But maybe next week.
First class trip to Vietnam.
But then, yesterday, I think it was, I'm driving past a cemetery here in town, and I see all these fire trucks, like, all by, like, with their lights on, parked mm-hmm. in front of the cemetery. I'm like, what the heck happened in the cemetery? I thought they were already all dead. But Turns out all the firemen and first aid squad, they were coming with like dozens and dozens of wreaths and putting them on every grave in the cemetery.
Oh, that's cool.
Which I thought was pretty cool, too. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know what? Those kind of things kind of put me in a little bit of the Christmas spirit. So there's good people out there. And Star Wars came out this weekend.
I don't know how that has to
do. No, me neither.
Did you watch a holiday special? Is that what happened?
I have Googled that several times, just to, like YouTube. They just
that,
to check.
That thing is awesome.
It's one of the most ridiculous pieces of film, I guess you can call it.
Well, the funny, like everybody points out, like anything that's ever happened with Star Wars has been like re-released or anything like that for
added dollars. They tried to hide that.
The animated series, all that. That is the only thing that's had one airing and never showed again. And never been put out on video
and like,
DVD.
George Lucas has tried to like hide it. Apparently, tried to get it destroyed. Dude, there's a scene in there with the Wookiees, like the
it's a Wookiee family waiting for Chewbacca to come back for it was something like Hope Day or something like that. They can't say Christmas, so it's like that's the native Wookiee.
I think maybe next year for our Christmas episode, we should watch this and like do like what we did for that Alien Sunday thing that we never released. And like kind of stop every half hour and break down our notes and really get into the Star Wars Christmas special.
Yeah.
We should do that next year.
Yeah. So it's like Hope Day and then out of the blue, like stormtroopers storm in and it's like, oh, we're taking you hostage. And it's like, aren't you trying to take care of the galaxy? You're kidnapping Chewbacca's
There's all
parents?
These like acid scenes like where they're – and like Luke looks all weird. Like I think he just had a car accident or something like that. And his face is all weird.
And the grandfather Wookiee got some virtual reality thing and some woman is like dancing provocatively and it's like weird.
We're not making – this is not us like going off the cuff and being weird. This is an actual –
No, that sounds like something I'd make up, Scott.
I know. But that's what I'm saying. For once, this is real. So, yeah, you should go check that out. But Star Wars came out. I loved it. I thought it was great. Were there a couple clunky scenes here and there? Of course. We'll get to that in a minute. But I went opening night. Wasn't planning on it, but I was just like, we have nothing going on. Let me see. And there was tickets available. I'm like, oh, sure. Mm-hmm. And I go to this theater that I've never been to in Parsippany. And I thought, like, you know, it's going to be crowded. So let's get there early, make sure we have a seat. I don't mind waiting around.
Yeah.
We get there an hour early. There's nobody there. I'm like, I'm like, we're walking around the movie theater, like, peeking in the doors. Like, like, where is it? There's another movie playing in the theater that we're playing.
Worried, like, the Justice League will just pop up and all. This is a weird take on The Last Jedi.
So we get there, and there's, like, there's Darth Vader there. There's, like, a stormtrooper. And... You know, Darth Vader's walking, big dude, big gigantic dude, and you know, all you hear throughout the hallways in the movie. So, but there's no one here, right? So the employees start like talking to themselves, like, but one's in a Kylo Ren thing and one's in a Darth Vader. But so they'd be like, oh, you know, like, but it'd be going through the voice simulator. So they're having these normal conversations.
There, I need a Marlboro.
Yeah. So he starts talking to me. He's like, got here early, I see. I'm like, yes, yes. And it's like,
yes, Lord Vader.
Yeah. And then it's just like, that's good, that's good. And like, I'm having this.
I can't have small talk with Darth Vader.
Well, that's what it was like, water cooler talk I get at the office. Like, how's the kid? Like, oh, I got here early. What you here to see? Like, you know. And then he comes walking in the movie theater and he like tries to embarrass me and Alex. He's like, so how long you been dating? You know, he's like, are you going to get married here? Like, he just starts. I'm like, all right, Darth, enough with the slapstick humor over there. And like,
so that's the true power of the dark side and all, trying to make awkward dates for people.
And he – but it was just so funny. I'm having exactly small talk with Darth Vader, but everything would be like, you're sitting in the big row so you can have leg room, right? I'm like, yes, yes. He's like, oh, good idea. But
he pushes the seat back. The dark side.
It was just I don't know.
Out of curiosity, did he make the sound or is
he
it
had
natural,
like a
voice thing?
Yeah, like a voice thing that was constantly breathing. And the, but when you would talk, it'd be like, you know, like James Earl Jones voice. It was, I was laughing to myself. But of course, we go, and my girlfriend needs to get the BB-8 popcorn. You're basically eating out of a robot.
Yeah, I got that too.
Yeah.
it was one of those, it's like, you know, for 9 extra cents, and you always go for it, and it's like, oh, you get a free refill. It's like, and at the end, it's like, I never get that free refill. What the heck? I spent like $20 on that.
So, I know this doesn't have much to do with Christmas, but I enjoyed the movie a lot. I thought it, it extended these old characters that I love the critics. Listen, if someone didn't like the movie, they didn't like the movie, but the critics like, it's if it's too much like the old Star Wars, it's too similar. Mm-hmm. If it's not like the old Star Wars, this doesn't even feel like a Star Wars movie. I'm like, how much more do you want out of Luke and Leia? It's amazing.
Well, you don't have to worry about much for Leia.
No. I was amazed she didn't, spoiler it, guys, she didn't die in the movie. And if you know what, you didn't see it by now, I'm sorry. Tough shit. Mm-hmm. No one's coming to Verbal Shenanigans for their Star Wars review. I guess everyone was probably surprised that they didn't kill Leia off.
Yeah, I mean, especially considering Luke, they quote-unquote killed him off. I mean, jokingly, as I say, it's like they never come back, these characters, because hell, freaking Yoda made an appearance. I was like, what the hell?
Yoda's back. I thought it was a good way. The new characters, I thought, shined through. There's a couple of things that, like that Phasma girl, she just came and died already. Like, I thought she was going to be kind of like a sub-villain, when the Finn fights.
Oh, yeah, the silver...
Yeah, Phasma something.
Whatever, I don't know the name.
She was in the last one, too. So I thought she was going to kind of be like Grand Moff Tarkin was to Darth Vader, like mm-hmm. the other villain. But I thought Kylo Ren, Luke, and Rey were fantastic. I thought that whole mm-hmm. story was cool. I liked what they did with the Force, like adding these new things that the Force can do. And I don't know what more people want. It was entertaining. It was funny. Did it have a couple of cheesy parts? Yes. If you watch the originals, they're loaded with kind of weird parts that aren't that great. Like, people will hate it no matter what. It's the people who can kind of look at it as a fun Star Wars film, like that we got to see Luke and Leia again and Chewie and R2, and you know, I thought it was great. I thought it was as good, if not better, than the first new one.
Yeah, I thought I would give it a very good, like a solid B. Nope. I kind of somewhat see what some people say, like at the beginning I thought they were doing a little too much cheesiness at the beginning, when it was comic hit after comic hit. I'm like, all right, give me my Star Wars movie. And I'm not saying it from the sense of there's no humor in any of the Star Wars movies, but it was coming at a rapid fire. I'm like, all right, Disney, you know what Star Wars is. Come on, let's go. And then they started getting into action. I think they balanced the new characters well with the old characters. I mean, nothing got seemed like throw in just to go, hey, I mean, about the closest one would be R2-D2, where they just shoved him in there, hi, old buddy.
Yeah. I kind of like how he kind of convinced Luke to go back, though, which was, kind of smart. Like,
showing the old Leia footage from the original.
The only scene I wasn't crazy about was that casino scene. I thought that was a little weird and forced in there. But
a little bit. I mean, I think they did it for visuals, and in the end, it kind of kept the thing moving. They had a plot there.
Right, I guess the message, I thought maybe if they lengthened the time they were there and had that storyline developing mm-hmm. through, it would have been good. But I thought the whole, like, everything came at once. Like, yeah, they beat these animals, they abuse these animals, and there's gamblers here, and Benicio del Toro's character popped in, and like, it was like a lot. And all that because they parked on the beach. Like,
yeah.
I was like, but
beach parking, and then, when there's a...
And then they got locked in the prison cell, and like, Benicio's like, all right, like, I could just boop, get out. I'm like, why'd you wait? Like, I don't know.
Hey, he seemed drunk, you know. That's what it always seems to be. Like, the drunk guys have all the knowledge in there, but... I liked his character. I thought they kind of threw him away at the end, like a better term. I'm not sure if he survived or not, but I think solid B all around. I mean, I can't complain. It extended it. I'm not at a point where I'm saying, okay, you forced it to bring it in, nor you forced it to get to the last one. I think good climaxes. I'm looking forward to that final, quote unquote, final battle, because I'm hearing there's supposed to be three after that.
I'm sure they'll keep going.
But for what they say, listen,
that $4 billion they're going to make, they're never going to stop making movies.
No, well, Han Solo is next year, his story. Then they do episode 9, and then for what I understand, they're still trying to figure out that they're doing another 3 that's not necessarily these characters, but future from a galaxy far, far away.
I like the new characters. I think Poe is awesome. He fits right into that universe, that cocky pilot. You know, mm-hmm. like, I thought he's great. Finn's good and Rey's good. The Rose character was okay. But I think the three main new characters are awesome. Like, I think they're good. I think Rey is great. She's
solid,
very
acting
good.
All around.
Like, she just fits. She just looks like she fits in the mm-hmm. Star Wars. I thought it was good, man. I'd go watch it again. The battle at the end was good on that salt planet. That was cool. I liked it. I enjoyed it. The Star Wars, like, fanboys are just too much. It's like, then don't go. Like, you're going to hate it no matter what they give you. Then just stay home and watch the old trilogy over and over again.
Yeah, well, it's like any series. If somebody came out and said, I'm going to try to do a new Godfather.
I want to be like, you guys have seen Return of the Jedi, right? Like, there's some weird moments in that movie. Like, mm-hmm. that is not a great movie, but it fits and it ties it all together. Yeah. And, you know, you need it for the trilogy to be there.
But they got to bring in Billy Dee Williams for number 9, man. Just coming in with a Colt 45 and all. How's it going, baby?
You want Billy Dee Williams, though, right?
Not even Lando Calrissian. No. I want everybody to be looking at him. Is he part of the scene? What?
Why is he done jeans on?
Yo, that guy's hitting on Ren. What the hell?
But I really liked it. I thought it was good. I thought it did the film justice. It was the first film to kind of be able to beat to its own story. The first one was kind of like A New Hope 2, you know, in a way. Mm-hmm. It's just a daunting task. Like, okay, take all these old characters, all these new characters, mash them together, and make a movie that everyone's happy about.
God bless. I mean, Disney and Marvel are the only ones who can make a universe, and they've been maintaining it. Everybody else who's tried it, the DC thing is, they're already saying they might be giving up because they lost so much money on Justice League. Universal tried their Dark Universe, starting with The Mummy, and that failed so miserably they already gave up. So,
yeah.
I mean, some people just know how to extend a story and extend a character versus just be like, look, it's that guy that you know.
And there has to be some give and take. Like, Star Wars, you have to be able to, like, let some things go. These characters, one's dead for real. Mm-hmm. It's amazing you got all these people back from a trilogy from 30-something years ago. Like, you have to give and take a little bit and suspend belief. People are like, it's not real. I'm like, realistic? This is Star Wars. It's a story about aliens and spaceships. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you have to, like, accept things and be like, and just enjoy the film for the film.
The funny thing was, at the end of the film, I had to explain some things to Izzy because the last one we saw was Rogue One, and she thought that was the last one. She's like, I don't understand. I thought they were all dead. I'm like, no, that's a different one. That's a prequel. So it's prequel to all the movies. No, it's the prequel to 4. So it's like 3.5. She's like, but the whole planet. It's like, that's not them.
Yeah. Overall, very much enjoyed it.
Yep.
But I guess it's time to get to our guest. There's a film on Netflix called Tree Man. And it's not like a new superhero. It's the lamest superhero ever.
First question, are you Groot?
Then again, they made Ant-Man, so.
That is true.
I thought that was pretty lame.
Pretty much, if you put anything in front of man, they'll figure out a way to make it work.
So it's called Tree Man, and it's about this guy, Francois, who comes down from Canada every year, and he sells Christmas trees in New York City. And it just documents the sale of these Christmas trees and all the process that goes into it. And he lives here for a month selling Christmas trees, basically in his white van.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty fascinating. I watched the whole film the other day, and I enjoyed it. So we have the two directors coming on and Francois. So these are the guys from Tree Man. All right. So Mike, this is a film that just brings the Christmas spirit that you were having trouble finding earlier. So
I thought it was pretty straight on my stuff, you know, with bringing in veterans into, like, buildings that are on fire and stuff.
Great plans. But I think this one's going to be – these guys are going to kind of capture your Christmas spirit. From the documentary Tree Man, we have Francois. Francois, how you doing?
Very good. Yourself?
We are doing great. We are trying to capture the Christmas spirit here. Mike is having a little difficulty, but we're gonna get him by the end here. And we also have the directors of the film, Brad and John. Brad and John, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Guys, so we both watched the film. I remember seeing some advertisements for it and whatnot. And essentially, I guess you could say the film, it's covering the life of Francois, and he comes down for over a month to sell Christmas trees from Canada. First off, how did the three of you guys kind of hook up? I guess we'll start with Brad and John. How did you even come across this story?
Well, it started with me. This is John speaking. I was Francois's customer for many years.
All right.
We bought our Christmas trees from Francois. Francois is our neighborhood tree seller. And I was Francois's customer for a good 7 or 8 years until one day Brad and I were actually working on another film. We were taking a break. And I started telling him about how I was going to go buy our Christmas tree this weekend. And he got interested in my telling about Francois and the relationship I had with him and Francois's stature as a local celebrity in the neighborhood. And Brad looked at me and a light bulb went off and said, "You know, this is a film." And I said, "I never did know it was a film, but now maybe I do." And that was the genesis of it.
Now, so
yeah, that was
go ahead.
Sorry, that was the genesis. But then it took us to we had to convince Francois.
So you grow up, yeah, not grow up. So you live with Francois. You're getting your trees from him. What about him? Like, made you say that's a film rather than, hey, he's just some dude selling Christmas trees? Like, what made you think, like, okay, let's spend the time, the money, the cameras, the everything that goes into it? I mean, you got to have a pretty good, like, reason why audiences would be like, wow, this guy's interesting. And it obviously did work, but what about him separated him?
Well, there were two things. One was, number one, the sense of a unique community that many, many of the tree sellers have around the holiday season in New York. I mean, I realized I had developed this friendship with Francois where I would come to see him and hang out with him and talk with him in the days and the hours when I wasn't shopping for a tree. And I, over time, realized that that wasn't unique, that there are lots of people like Francois who have these relationships with thousands of customers in the city who come back every year, and they renew these annual relationships, and they look forward to this, and they visit with them, and they bring the tree sellers presents, and they invite them into their homes, and they become a really important part of their annual holiday calendars and traditions. So I knew, number one, something about the extent to which this interesting subculture existed. And then I knew Francois in particular from having spoken with him over the years, and knew that this was a guy who was intelligent and thoughtful and perceptive and charismatic and had become, as they say, you know, an important person in the lives of all of these locals.
Right.
And I thought, this is a guy who can carry a story. That's what we both thought.
Well, and this question's for Francois. I mean, you come down from Canada every year. Just how, what do you do outside of the tree selling, and what kind of made you think about not only selling trees but going all in, per se, and coming down to New York to do this?
Well, first of all, you have to understand that I started selling trees by accident. Like, the main reason that drives men around is money. So the first year I came down here, down to New York, to sell trees, basically for the money. And also because you want to live in New York, you want to, you know, you want to be part of it. You want to be part of New York during Christmas time and all these things. And my work in my home is I'm an awning man, so I'm doing awnings. And this is a seasonal business, and we close it in November and reopen it in March or April. So in between, a man needs to find something to keep busy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the main reason why I started this whole journey that was that is going on for 10 years,
right?
And it was an accident of life, you know.
Now you get into this, did you know that you were gonna be staying in a van away from your family? Like, did you know this all going in, or did this develop over the years and you realized that's what you had to do? Or was it instantly like, I'm going to be gone for a month?
No, I knew it very well, and that's why even the first year I was well prepared, you know, like I had the right clothing, and I knew that I would have to spend a month, like five weeks in a van. So I bought a van that was kind of so-so, but that was all right.
Right.
And I made it my home sweet home. Her name was Lucille at that time. And Lucille has been very, very well. Probably John remember Lucille, a blue van, like very basic army type of organization in there. Very very dry, I would say. But that was the best part of it was that it was dry. Even you know, New York in December is pretty wet, so that was the main thing. But yes, I was prepared for it. The main thing I wasn't prepared for was the kind of people I would meet in there, and the kind of neighborhood and the kind of social activity that I would encounter in there, and that I would be part of. That was the best and the most surprising aspect of selling trees in New York, as opposed to the ID I had before I left for my first year.
Now, what does your family say when you're like, "Yeah, honey, I'm going to be gone for some of the main parts of the holiday season. Have fun. I'll be in New York." What does the family say?
Well, I have a lovely and intelligent wife that understood very, very well the kind of plan I had when I left the first year. And with confidence, there's no real question asked. I mean, it's just like, you know, like my ancestors were going in the woods, you know, for the whole winter to do their work. So being gone for 5 weeks, not such a big deal. We feel it's a big deal now in our postmodern societies. But in fact, that was something usual, and that is still something usual. I have friends who are going to, you know, to manage constructions in Africa or something. They're there for 4 weeks, or right, 3 weeks, for 5 weeks. So it's not such a long journey. The fact is that it's such an obscure work and an obscure type of thing. You know, like no one knows in here about these Christmas guys setting up in the streets of New York. That doesn't happen anywhere else in the world. It's a very New Yorkish type of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the main surprising thing for people, and some people didn't really believe I was carrying a real business in there. They thought I was going there for 5 weeks to have fun, you know.
A break from the wife. You just covered it with the tree business.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Honey, I'm going to go sell some Thanksgiving turkeys.
Go ahead,
Mike. So, worse than that, some people in here thought about hiring a detective to go on me.
Put in little microphones and cameras funny, in the tree.
So, to John and Brad, when you were coming up with this idea, what was like the timeline on figuring out not only working with Francois, but who else to feature in your film when doing this?
Well, since we came up with the idea, it was probably the end of November, early December is when we approached Francois. So we always knew that it would be for the following year. So once he agreed to participate, it gave us, you know, almost a year to start preparing for it. So, you know, we spoke with him and we spoke with some of the guys who work with him, and we started to develop our plan. John and I drove up to visit Francois, I think it was in May, to film a little bit, to create a little trailer that we made to raise money. And we talked to him more about the project, and we hashed through the story ideas. And you know, from a filmmaking perspective, the story is perfect because we knew we had a beginning and we knew we had an end.
Right.
He leaves his family the week before Thanksgiving, and he spends 5 weeks in New York, and then he drives back to be with them to have Christmas dinner. So we knew approximately what kind of timeline we would have for the filming, which makes all of this a lot easier, especially when you're making a documentary. And then as in terms of some of the other characters who are featured in the film, we sort of got to them once the selling season started, and we just approached a bunch of people and asked them if they were interested, and most of the people said yes.
What's the shooting schedule like? Are you guys there all day long, or did you plan like X amount of, okay, we're here from 5 to 10 every day? What does the production side of it look like?
I mean, from a production perspective, it was 5 days a week, and it was all day. Some days, some weeks were more than 5 days. And it wasn't, you know, there's no set schedule for him. He gets up in the morning, sells trees, and then goes to bed at night. And from a production perspective, it's we need to be with him as much as we can. And then, of course, we had to film some of the other people. And there were certain things that were solid, like the Thanksgiving parade is the same time every year, so we knew we would be shooting that. We wouldn't be with him, but we were with him at least 4 days every week, and the schedule was whatever he had going on that day.
And it was, yeah, it was sort of traditional for documentary film.
Right.
You show up, you're there, you shoot a lot, you're ready to shoot, you try to disappear. We were on an open sidewalk with traffic and customers, trying to not get in Francois's way and be unobtrusive and capture moments as they were organically happening. And we did that a lot of days and a lot of nights. The only thing we had to plan for was we knew that we wanted to get overnight. There's a guy named Angel who's prominent in the film. And Angel's shift starts at 10 o'clock when Francois retires for the night and goes until 7 o'clock the next morning. And we planned to park ourselves with Angel and pull an overnighter. So that was, that was on the schedule. But still, we were just rolling and waiting to see what was going to happen over the course of the night.
Now, Francois, when the trees come up from North Carolina, I'm trying to figure out how the relationship is. Do they give you a certain amount? Do you buy the trees itself, or are you like contracting through the company that brings up the trees to sell them for them?
Hello.
I'm here. I think we may have lost Francois.
I'm here. I'm under Francois. Falling off.
Francois's gone.
He disappeared into the...
My wife said I had to get back early.
He made like a tree and decided to leave.
But Scott, yeah, Christmas trees don't have leaves.
It's true.
Your joke has a flaw.
All right.
Hopefully he'll come back.
He'll come back. He always comes back.
He always comes back. Yeah. Exactly.
It'd be great if he's in his van with this like 20-minute answer. And then he's like, hello?
Hello? Yeah. Well, in the meantime, let me ask...
Oh, there he is, it, Brad.
Francois?
Three man.
So, Francois, when you fell off, Mike was just asking you about the tree. Like, in North Carolina, are you contracted for a certain amount of trees? Or do you, like... I also want to know, when you start selling a bunch of them, do you call them and say, reload me and bring me another batch? How does that work?
Well, I'm partner with someone from New York who's also partner with a lot of tree guys in around New York, about 80 sites, 80 locations. So we have a big amount of vans that are going down for us, and year after year, I would say that our market is almost the same. So we developed through the years a way of getting the right trees at the right time, the right sizes, the right grades, and all these things. And it goes by itself with a little adjustment, meaning that, for example, if I have a weekend that is a few thousand more than the year before, then I'm calling the office to make sure that they load me up with the right amount of trees. And but year after year after I've established a certain amount of business, it didn't move that much. You know, it had a big boom with the movie, of course, because it brought in a lot of attention from around, and people were coming from far to get their trees, you know. That still probably got me like about $15,000 more in sales.
Wow. Wow.
Especially the year that it was released.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. You know, with the success of the film and you know, it getting notoriety and being played on Netflix and whatnot, did that actually affect you, I guess, like returning the year after or whenever after the film came out? Did it start to become people come try to say hi to you and it become hard to like do what you were there to do, which was sell Christmas trees?
Well, of course, it brought a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. It was a good. It's one of the best things that happened in my life.
Yep.
You know, because I think that you know, like it doesn't happen often that people would say, "Hey, man, your life is interesting. Let's film it." You know, it's something that doesn't happen so often.
Nope.
So when you have the chance, you grab it. And when you have two talented directors and a very good director of photography that are shooting that chef-d'oeuvre, I mean, it becomes something very, very nice that, of course, will bring a lot of people to just come to me, shake hands, and tell me, like, you know what, man? I don't buy Christmas trees, but your story is great. I love it. So I wanted to come and shake hands with you. And that was something that really never happened to me in my life, you know, that people were just coming to me, not being my friends, but just being people who got interested in my story through mm-hmm. a documentary.
Right.
So it brought a lot of nice things. Some people were bringing me, like, gifts. Some people were giving me money, just, you know, saying that, you know, they know I have a family and everything. So they were giving me money just like that, you know. Mm. They were giving me food, you know. It got me into a world that I didn't know, you know.
Right.
A world of people, mm-hmm. of kind of famous people who, that, you know, people don't want you to pay for this or pay for that. And it's a weird world, you know. It's something that wasn't used to.
No, this one's for Brad.
And,
go ahead.
No, it's just that, you know, it's something that I think, you know, I think it's Warhol that said we all have our 15 minutes of fame.
Right.
I had a couple of years, so I'm very happy.
Now, this one's for Brad and John. So after you film the whole, I guess, holiday season, whatever, the end date, you wrap it up. Did you guys know you had a story in those tapes and in that footage, or did that become like more of a thing when you got into the cutting room floor? Like, okay, now we got to develop this story. Or did you know going in, like, hey, I know what I want this to look like and what parts we're going to include? Or did it develop more in the editing room?
We knew immediately that we had a great story, and we knew even after the drive down from Francois's house to New York City before the season even started, just based on the conversations that we had with him on camera, the conversations he had on camera, John and I knew that this was a special guy and it was going to be a special story. So while it did take us time during the edit to put together what came to be the film, we knew from the get-go that we were going to have something really special.
And that's right. We drove down the week before Thanksgiving with Francois, and it's a two-day drive because Francois has to stop and pick up supplies, and we do an overnight in a motel in New York State. So we were in the car shooting with him for hours on the way down, and this was, you know, just the first days of shooting. And halfway through the drive, Brad and I and our cinematographer, David, knew that this was going to work, that Francois was everything that I knew personally and all that was coming through on camera, and he was going to be able to carry the story. So we were confident that if only Francois was going to come through, and we didn't have any of the other tree sellers who we thought we would have, but if that didn't work out and we only had Francois's story, that it would still work. I mean, we knew it was strong.
Right.
And then we had, you know, the double gift of finding half a dozen other sellers who we just sort of, you know, did field research and got to meet them and picked out the ones who we thought would have their own compelling stories. The challenge in the edit was that we wanted to hold this to about, you know, no more than 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And other people also have fascinating and compelling stories, just because the job brings out really adventurous, intrepid people who've lived eccentric and interesting lives, and they all rise to the occasion in New York and become these special figures. So we knew when we were shooting that we had many stories to tell. The edit was, you know, was the process of whittling it down to something cohesive, but we knew early on this was going to work.
Now, for Francois, the documentary showed a lot about showing a really bad rainy day and how it's kind of depressing. There's not a lot of sales going on. I'm kind of curious, when they get a nice snowfall, do you see more business coming because it's it's so Christmassy and gets people in the mood? Or is it just, hey, it's bad weather and people are just running to get back home?
Yeah, you know, I think it rushes people to the stand when it's snowing. It's for people who weren't sure when they would do it, it's a good day to do it. That being said, New Yorkers have a very tight schedule, so I don't think that snow will move it that much.
Yeah.
Honestly, but one thing though, it changes the mood of people. It puts a magic in the air.
It does,
and probably people will be willing to spend a bit more money for a bigger or a better tree or something. It's a good commercial thing for sure, you know, and especially when it's snowing on Broadway at 8 or 9 at night, it's magical, you know. It's magic. There's nothing to beat that. So yes, it puts the whole area into a very good mood. It puts me into a very good mood because, you know, as long as it doesn't accumulate, snow is very, very good for the for the mind, let's say. Yeah.
Now, Francois, a big part of the film, which was really cool to see, was the guys who work for you, the kids who work for you, their home stories. You know, you just see these good, hardworking kids and whatnot. I guess this goes for all three of you guys. So the story, Francois, is enough to tell a story, but you find these stories of these kids that almost become, I guess, in a way, your family for a month. And I know you say in the film that you kept in touch with them during the year and whatnot. One, do you still keep in touch with those guys, and are they still working for you? And two, why do you think they seem to kind of return to you and come back every year and work what seems a lot of hours and work pretty hard for their keep?
Well, I've known, for example, I've encountered Jason. He was 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to work for me. I didn't want him to work because he was too young.
Right.
But he finally, I explained it in the film that, you know, he finally convinced me that, that he would be a good worker for me. My business was still small at that time. So, I didn't really need anyone to work except to do deliveries. And he catched it up and he just started doing it. It's a friendship that was born this day.
Right.
And same thing with Nelson. He was just hanging around. He knew Jason. He was kind of annoying, you know, but he was a good kid. And that being said, with years, I learned to appreciate the guy. And he's such a street smart person. It's just unbelievable. This guy's a survivor, you know. And Jason, he's a very talented guy coming from a tough environment. And these guys, they belong to a better world than the world that they're in now. You know, right. Like they should be able to raise themselves to, you know, getting into an easier world, I would say. And that's what I thought I could help them with. You know, just think about the fact that you need to have, kind of a father figure in life, and these two guys
right.
didn't have any. So I thought that it would be good for me to, you know, give them something that they didn't have. Did I succeed? Probably, because they're doing good now. They're grown men now. They're no kids anymore.
Right.
And but they're still friends, and we still get along very well. And you know, like I mean, these two guys are, I would say, the best gift I had in there. Meaning that without them, there wasn't any business.
What year was this when the footage we saw was?
It was 2013.
Oh, okay.
No. We shot in 2013. 4 years? Yep. Oh, yeah. Yep. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, this is right. 2013. Wow.
Wow.
Yep.
Holy cow. Yep.
Time flies.
Yeah, so the footage we're seeing, those guys would be that was 4 years ago.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mike.
Now for John and Brad, I mean, the movie is so naturally paced and seeing so many people. How hard is it to shoot something like that where you have to basically get everybody to sign off and get permissions to show their faces, whether it's deliveries or people walking across the street? How hard is it to keep it natural and still make sure you're okay legally, for lack of a better term?
Wow, that's a good question. You know, in terms of keeping it natural, as John said, you know, there were just the three of us on the street, and we our production team was lean. But at the same time, at least one of us had releases on us all the time. So anybody who was interviewed before mm-hmm. we put a camera in front of them, we had them sign release forms allowing us to film them. And then, you know, you always see people who, when they see the camera, they shy away from it, and you know instinctively not to shoot them.
Right.
And for the most part, and just sort of generally speaking, we were catching people. If we were trying to be invisible on the sidewalk and we were capturing moments, we would capture the moments first and then ask for permission. So we weren't obtrusive, and we were getting people in their natural behavior. Mm-hmm. Also, when the people come to Francois and they come to the other sellers, they're comfortable because these, you know, they are making their annual visits to their sellers. These are people they have relationships with. So they're not only, it's not only familiar to them, but they're there because they're happy. They're getting the tree annually is a happy occasion for people, but also they're happy to visit as they do regularly during the course of the month. So it's a familiar environment for mm-hmm. a lot of the people we were shooting, which just made them, I think, more comfortable. And we didn't have to do much in the way of formal interviews. I mean, we were pulling Francois aside and we would get hours with him, and some of the other sellers we would try to do longer interviews, but for the most part we were avoiding long sit-down interviews, and I think that also made people less stiff and more themselves on camera. The few interviews that we did that were sit-down, we were also dealing with people who they were comfortable talking to camera, they were comfortable with us, and as Brad said, you know, we didn't present much of an imposing presence.
Right.
There were only three of us who shot this entire film. And I think that's something that also makes people feel a little more comfortable. If we were a big crew, you know, you may have gotten a different vibe from the people who were on camera.
Yeah. Now, before we go, so I got a couple quicker questions for you guys. Now, Francois, there's one thing I did want to talk about. It's the scene where you're driving down 87 in upstate New York, and you have this moment where you're talking about the Adirondacks, and that there's something magical there, and that you connect with it, and it makes you think. And the reason I connect with this, I visit the Adirondacks maybe 2-3 times a year. We've been vacationing there before I was even born with my family. Been going up there. Just out of curiosity, what is it about that area that you connect with so much? And you, because I feel the same way. So that's what was kind of interesting. That's kind of what caught me quickly with the film.
Yeah, well, I would say it's not specific to the Adirondacks. It's specific to
kind of, you know, higher mountains.
Right.
And I didn't know that kid because I've done this road like many, many times, and I'm a big fan of the Catskills.
Right.
And but I had the same the first time I was in the Andes, and I was, you know, climbing a mountain in a bus. I felt that I've been there before. And so I had the same type of, maybe it's altitude that worked bizarrely on
lack
my
of
mind
oxygen
or something. Yeah, probably. But it's an experience I have, and where I have a house in Quebec, and here it's not mountains as high as the Adirondacks. But there's one place, Tremblant, which is a big mountain where I ski, and I have the same type. But you know, when I get on top of that mountain, there's something mystical about it. You know, and it's even before the beer. You know?
Sure, it is. That's what we all say.
So it's something that I feel in a couple of places. But the Adirondacks is kind of my second home mountain wise. Yeah.
Now we would be remiss. What are you up to now after the success of this film? It's another Christmas season. Christmas is a week away. Are you still selling trees? Have you moved to something different? What are you up to these days?
Well, last year my wife took over the business because I had some health issues. She did it last year, but she didn't do it this year.
Mm-hmm.
We're taking a break for the moment. Maybe we'll be back someday, but it's a tough business,
right?
And I'm not getting younger.
Okay.
So and I can tell you, it's been 2 years now that I haven't sold trees in New York, and my body works much better, because you know? There it's 35 days walking on concrete, so
right.
Your back and knees are getting, you know, kind of ripped up, and all the rest of it. So I feel better now. Maybe next year I had an hernia also. So, I mean, all sorts of issues that men have getting close to the 50s.
Right.
I think we all, we're all going into that direction, and whatever. I mean, I think that I'll be back someday,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know when. I don't know in what circumstances. In fact, it's never been that my work to feed my family. You know, that was
right.
Sugar on the cake. So mm-hmm. that was very welcome. But it's, you know, now I'm working on different other projects, and you know, it is what it is. But I miss it. I can tell you, I miss it. I miss my friends. I miss my customers. I miss the smell of these trees day after day. You know, this weird feeling of being at the same place for 35 days, but being happy to be there.
Now, this
one's tell you that this is the first Christmas that Francois and his family have actually been together for the Christmas holiday and have gone out and bought their own tree together. It never happened all the years he was selling.
Yeah.
This was
yeah.
the great irony, was That's that fun. Francois was bringing trees in, you know, the Christmas season to 1,000 customers, and he never did it with his own family. This is the first year he's done it.
I smell a sequel.
Yeah, and we had a great time doing it.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the sequel is I'm going to sell Hanukkah bushes in Ottawa.
Oh, yeah.
There's a booming market up there.
No one wants to follow you for a month.
It's a great idea.
Still haven't sold anything, guys. It's really weird.
Now, this one's for Brad.
Get the camera.
Brad and John. With the success of the film, obviously on Netflix, I know you guys have treemanfilm.com and whatnot. What is the future, or what is the present of the film? And also, where can people go to check this out or say hi or even get a little bit more info on you two or Francois? Where can they go?
Well, I think to check out the movie, the best place to see it, like you said, is on Netflix.
Yep.
And then we have the website, treemanfilm.com. We have a Facebook page. We have Twitter. And, you know, people communicate with us. We get a lot of fan letters, mostly for Francois, honestly, and for good reason. Right. Most people contact us through Facebook, and we have a Facebook page, Tree Man Doc, and people, if they're interested in reaching out, that's a good place to do it.
Well, we had a first the other day, because the film, you know, this is the second year that the film has been on Netflix and iTunes, yep. et cetera. And as Brad said, typically the viewers respond on Facebook, and most of the responses for Francois, justifiably so, and it's all positive and it's great. And every day we get a couple of more, at least, on the site that we hear. It's wonderful. But the other day in my mailbox, we received a Christmas card from a viewer in Wheaton, Illinois, who had seen the film, and she was moved to buy a Christmas card, find my address, and mail us this card. That's first. Cool. We had not had that one before. Which was, and it was she wrote this lovely note, and it's great. I mean, you know, whenever you do a project, hearing from an audience is wonderful. And this project, though, is special because we are getting the people who are bothering to respond are letting us know that the film is having an impact on them in a way that we had hoped it would with audiences.
That's awesome. You guys have any future projects coming up?
We're working on different things right now, and we hope to have further announcements in the near future.
All right. So before you guys go, one, I want to thank the three of you. You got an awesome film. It sounds like you had a great idea. It came together great. Francois, you seem like kind of the salt of the earth kind of guy, just a genuine dude. I just wanted to ask the three of you, each of you individually, what is your Christmas tree preference? Do you like fat, tall, skinny trees? Are you a big, gigantic bush kind of guy? What do you got? Brad, go. What do you like?
I've never had a Christmas tree in my life. I'm Jewish, and we don't celebrate Christmas.
Aw, you got to get one anyway.
But if I were to get a tree, if I were to get a Hanukkah bush or a Christmas tree, I would get a Fraser, probably 10 foot. Sounds about right.
All right.
Maybe 9, 10 foot Fraser. Only natural tree. You can't buy a fake tree. I developed a deep appreciation for the ritual, even though it's not my particular ritual.
Right.
If I were to have a tree or a Hanukkah bush, it would be the big fat Fraser.
John?
And I am also Jewish and grew up without a tree. However, after I got married to a Christmas tree gal, I became a Christmas tree convert. So I've been a Christmas tree owner for many years. But because we live in New York City, everything is determined by the square footage of your apartment. So you ask what kind of tree
Charlie Brown
we get. Not a Charlie Brown tree, better than a tabletop, but we have high ceilings. But we have, floor space, which is at a premium. So we're always, every year, shopping for what about, I think, 90% of Francois' customers are shopping for, which is a tall, skinny tree.
All right, Francois, the tree man himself, what do you say?
I love the big, fat, French-speaking balsam.
Yes, yes. I like big, fat trees, too. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It's like I have my 9.5 foot ceiling, and my tree now is 9 1/4.
No star, no room.
So there's the snowman on top that kind of has a neck wreck.
Brad, John, Francois, thank you guys so much for joining us, and have a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and good luck with the film.
Thank you very much. It's great talking to you.
Merry Christmas.
You too, guys.
Pleasure, guys.
So, Mike, do you have the Christmas spirit yet?
I was close. Then your dog was just dropping bombs like crazy during the interview, and it just ripped me.
So it's back down.
Yeah, I was getting that pine smell in my mind, and then somebody said, "Oh no, you're not."
No. Well. The Tree Man documentary, awesome guys. Just very fascinating. It's a cool documentary, man.
Yeah.
So you guys should go check it out. But
Francois the Tree Man.
Oh, please continue.
Yeah. I don't do Christmas carols as we document it. So,
oh, yeah. Well.
But he waved goodbye saying, don't you cry. I may be back again someday.
Close.
Yeah.
I think you added a few words in there.
I think it's the second line. I mean, Frosty the Snowman, then there's something. But I got the last two right. So I got a 75 out of this.
So your Christmas spirit level, where are you feeling?
I'm still struggling, man. I'm still struggling.
This is weird, man. I mean, even the talking about veteran, talking about firemen being put into a fire.
I mean,
fire.
That put a smile on my face, but it doesn't really put me in a Christmas mood.
All right, man. Well, maybe what do you got? What do you got? Well, maybe this will put
I mean,
us
you
through.
Told me to come up with something Christmassy, so I looked on the internet and some of the stories of the worst Christmas gifts ever.
Oh, great. The worst Christmas gifts. Yeah. I see where your mind's at.
Yeah, yeah. You want to hear some of these stories?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. All right. This person wrote, at the fourth grade Christmas grab bag in Mr. Winnie's class.
It already sounds funny.
Yeah. I unluckily picked the very last number. I had to watch painfully as my classmates went up one by one and selected one awesome toy after another. I'm talking the hottest G.I. Joe figures and Micro Machines.
Ooh, Micro Machines. Yeah. I remember those.
Yeah. And when it was finally my turn, all that was left was this little red plastic barrel monkeys game, which at the time seemed equivalent to a box of pencils. The worst was having to fake play the game by myself afterwards. Didn't want to offend my mystery gift giver while my buddies zoomed around the room with their cool toys. I've never played with the game ever again, even though now it's a classic.
Barrel Monkeys was pretty boring.
Yeah, I never got that
game. Never got it either.
Okay. My ex-boyfriend used to call me Larry as a joke instead of Perry. For the holidays one year, he gave me a Tiffany's Robin Egg blue box. Exciting. Inside, I found a beautiful initial necklace, but an L for Larry. I tried wearing it, but it was too hard to explain why the pricey jewelry had the wrong letter. To this day.
So he got his own name.
No, he gave her the nickname name as the initial. Oh. Her name is Perry. He jokingly calls her Larry, and he thought it'd be cute to spend a lot of money with the letter L instead of the P. I mean, I guess you can bend the P, turn it upside down and bend the L to a P.
You're really transitioning that out pretty hard.
I tried wearing it, but it was too hard to explain why the pricey jewelry had the wrong letter. To this day, I'm still in search of a best friend whose name starts with a letter L so I can pass it along.
Mm, pretty bad. Pretty bad. Yep. On a side note, what's the worst gift you ever got?
Worst gift I ever got, it was something I asked for, I think I talked about on the cast before, which ended up being very crappy. I asked for a Tyco hovercraft.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
And it looked amazing in the commercials. It glides on flat tops. It'll go on water and just zoom off. And you're thinking, oh, my God, this goes on all terrains. And you have this remote control. And it's awesome. First off, the battery took 8 hours to charge for maybe 10 to 15 minutes of play, and everything that got in its way would stop it. So
I didn't hover over it.
I tried it on our driveway, and basically it would come up to a leaf and stop.
Mm.
And then I went down to our local lake and tried to play with it, and the battery died, and it was in the middle of the lake for a while until I recharged it.
Did you have to go swim out and get it?
No, I just had to basically, I'm like, all right, because it was kind of icy, the water's not moving, so it's like, all right, let me put the charger on for 8 hours, and I'll get my toy back.
I gotta go back for my toy. I'll be back later.
I'll be back tomorrow.
I think the worst thing I ever got was a Pizza Hut gift certificate. That was pretty weird. I had an aunt who like gave me a Pizza Hut gift card. I'm like,
yeah, right off the bat, it's like, if I like pizza, why are you giving me specifically this pizza?
That's why I think it was just totally a re-gift. It had to be a re-gift. Someone got a Pizza Hut gift card and was like, I ain't using this shit.
Yeah, I also remember, like, our work, instead of giving, like, any kind of bonuses, They would give us the cheapest. They gave us like a plastic clock with the company name on it. and the clock would never keep time. It was always slow. And then like one time it was like, it looked like a lock, but it wasn't a lock. It was just basically a square with a hook on it. And it's like, I don't even understand what this is supposed to be. It's just like a keychain. And it's like, I'd really rather have a few hundred dollars in my bank account right now. Yeah,
that's pretty bad. A lock. All right. Give me something else.
All right. It was a shirt that had, "I'm not a gynecologist, but I'll take a look anyway." Oh, it was from my stepdad's mom. She knows I want to be a doctor, and her English was not that good. I find it hilarious. Once we translated to her, she almost cried from embarrassment.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's a pretty good
one. That's a pretty horrific shirt.
All right.
Let's any of those slogan kind of shirts are the worst, man. I hate them. Yeah. Like the boardwalk shirts, like, oof.
I think the time my parents took a vacation to Vegas, it was something like, what was it, like liquor in the front, poker in the back t-shirt. And I'm like, number one, I was like 15 at the time. And number two, I'm like, when on earth is there a scenario where I can wear this somewhere?
It's really bad.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's really bad.
When I was 15, we were broke as a joke. My crazy mother gave my sister a new robe. I got a mason jar filled with sugar with a handwritten note about how sweet I was. Two days later, I came home to find that the sugar was gone. She used it to make cookies.
So she gave him sugar and then re-gifted the sugar, basically.
Yeah.
Or took back the sugar.
Took back the gift, in essence, yeah. It's the thought that counts, and then she said, screw the thought, I had to make a dozen sugar cookies.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
A wooden pop-out play set from my aunt, recommended age was 2 to 4. I was 14.
I love it.
I got a book called Coping with Being Adopted from Santa while I was in high school. Was news to me.
Ooh, that sounds fake. That one sounds fake.
Yeah. My uncle got me a giant block of cement once. He put random things throughout the block and gave me a miniature hammer and chisel. I actually chiseled through the whole thing and found some coins and what appeared to be an arrowhead. My uncle is the strange one in our family. And those are my stories.
I like the idea of, like, if there was like $100 bill in the cinder block.
If you had a real gold to it, it's like, oh my God, I love you at the end. But
I remember in Boy Scouts we did like a white elephant kind of game,
mm-hmm.
and we just started taking it to the extreme all the time, and like you would kind of booby trap your present. So one time I took a present and I wrapped it in a plastic. It was like a CD or something like that. And I wrapped it in a plastic bag, and then I put it in a bigger plastic bag, and I took like ham glaze and dumped it in there, and I took like ranch dressing and dumped it in there, like a million like orange juice and all this stuff. So then I put it in a box so that whoever had, if you wanted the CD, you had to like dip your hand into the all that stuff.
Tell me it was like a Paula Abdul CD or something like that.
Knowing back then, it was probably like some kind of punk rock band or something that we were into, like Pennywise or something like that. But I remember doing that a lot. I remember a couple of white elephant games. I last year I gave a sub sandwich to somebody. It was like a $10 limit, so I got like a fully loaded awesome sub sandwich and just wrapped it up like a wine bottle kind of. And then they opened it up. It's like a sub.
It'd be great if you had like a ton of oil and vinegar on it. It's just dripping through the paper.
One year I gave a goldfish, a live goldfish, in a bowl.
That's like the worst. It's like, it was like this thing ain't going to last a week.
Well, I mean, my friends just basically do it. It's all for humor. Like, someone gave, like, the Jean-Claude Van Damme, like, box set of, like, his movies. Like, a bunch of stuff like that. So,
well, that's supposed to be, like, the worst gifts. But, right. You know, those other stories kind of set me back. I got to be honest, Scott. Not feeling the Festivus of all.
The Festivus?
Yes. It's the holiday season. We have to include all of them.
So we're going to leave here without you being in the Christmas spirit.
Well, I don't know. I mean, We got to figure out something, I guess. I mean, I could just go to the Jewish side and start doing the Hanukkah thing.
Maybe I mean, your girlfriend's Jewish, so maybe, yeah. maybe that's what's what. Maybe you could be the most like festive new Jew. Like you could bring Hanukkah to the masses.
Ah, yeah. You did say
you could sell Hanukkah bushes. Like,
yeah,
you are.
That's part of my story.
Maybe this is what has to happen.
Tree Man 2, yeah.
Tree Man 2, Michael Burlew. Electric Bugaloo. Maybe this is what needs to happen.
All right.
But you know what, Burlew? I think since you're not in the Christmas spirit, I'm going to go as far to say we're going to do a second episode tomorrow. We're going to do a Christmas episode part two.
I mean, I guess I can show up.
And I think I have one guest that will change the face of time.
I can't fathom who you brought in that would change anything.
Well, on that note, let's get out of here because you're coming back tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. To be continued.
And we're going to record Christmas part two, because we did Halloween, we did a two-part thing, yeah. so why not? So I guess with that, Burlew, anything to promote in the meantime?
Since it's the season to give, I would say redcross.org. I give some money out there. There's still people out in Puerto Rico who's looking for electricity, drinking water, items like that. There's no reason to promote anything of mine when people are out there that need the help, so please go to redcross.org and give all you can this Christmas season.
On a similar note, I actually wanted to promote the, I talked about earlier, the NJ Fireman's Home, New Jersey mm-hmm. Fireman's Home. I went there and I was kind of, I guess touched is the word. No, I wasn't touched, but like touched emotionally. I just think it's a fantastic place. It's just really cool to see. The guys are really genuine dudes, and the women... The woman that I would deal with, Monica, was like a sweetheart as far as like, you know, like trying to schedule a show and just seeing how they treat the people there. So that is actually at njfh.org. To get more info, you can make donations. You could also, like, they're always looking for like entertainment for them and things like that. So that is the New Jersey Fireman's Home.
Great cause.
So Burlew, I mean, we didn't succeed. I wanted to break you out. I wanted to get you. But I think making you come here tomorrow and forcing you to deal with my dog's farts is going to really lighten the – right.
Yeah.
Put you in –
Well, don't light anything. We'll die in here.
But I want to thank the guys from Tree Men. If you enjoyed this episode or any episode, go back, listen to other episodes, share it, like it, comment on it, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff. Life is funny. Laugh at it. We'll see you tomorrow, Burlew.
All right. We'll see what you can do, man. Mm-hmm.
A little slow to load.
Do you want me to continue to be depressed? I don't know what to do here. Eating other editors with each every energetic. That's gonna be down the road.
All right, I'll just switch gears and play this Christmas song instead. Maybe. Okay. I can't do it quick enough.
Hit 'em high, hella high, historical. Hey, Holocaust hints, hear 'em holler at your homeboy.
All right, well, Ariana Grande gets the win. Goodbye, guys.
Later.
Merry Christmas. Tune in tomorrow for part two.
Me-hoo. Me-hoo-hoo-hoo.
Tune in, guys. Good night.